It's a typical Vegas night. The city's alive. This is a city that never sleeps. You know, they've got the pyramids over here. You've got the Eiffel Tower over there. And right around the corner, you're in Venice. They're all fakes, of course. Genuinely fake. In fact, they say that most people prefer this over the original.
Now, what are you guys doing here?
What does it look like we're doing here? Anyway.
Why are you filming without me?
Who are you?
I'm the real you.
No, you're not. I'm the real me.
Now listen, you prove it.
Well, I... imagine.
Many impersonators here in Vegas. Even Elvis is alive. In fact, several of him. But none is the real king. Not even the one across the road here in the Viva Las Vegas Chapel. And they tell me that he's the very best Elvis in town.
Nothing's beyond being copied. For the record, this is the real Eiffel Tower, and I really am in Paris. I'm here on the hunt for the ultimate counterfeit. Be on the lookout for counterfeits. They're everywhere, from clothes to perfume, cars, toys, even food, if you can believe that. Roughly translated, this street I'm on is called the Road of a Crook, or a Cheat. Rather appropriate address for the place I'm headed to. The business of counterfeiting has been around for a really long time. These stoppers are the oldest counterfeits on display, and it says here that they're about 2,000 years old. And they were used to seal pots filled with wine. So that's the real one. And these here are the fakes. I bet the guys who made these counterfeits would be pretty amazed at how far counterfeiting's come in the last 2,000 years. Today it accounts for about 7% of global trade and costs the world's economy around $500 billion a year. How did you come across the counterfeits in the sense of what you have on display here? Do people donate them, or are they things that you've personally come across?
It's seizures. Seizures from legal European authorities. It does belong to the legal French legal system who lent it to us. It's in some cases, like this painting, this false Matisse painting over there, people are trying to sell this for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So, Philip, why a museum on counterfeit?
Well, basically, it's to educate the consumer, because this museum is obviously open to the public. It's also to show them that we don't only have... that counterfeiting is not only about luxury goods, which was perhaps the case 30 years ago, but it's also about all kind of industries, pharmaceutical industries, obviously pharmaceutical drugs, automobile parts, DVDs, every kind of product.
So what is a counterfeiter's motivation?
Well, I think it's pretty simple with respect to the counterfeiter's goals. It's about earning money. I mean, it's just doing everything what they can to earn a maximum profit with investing a minimum.
So, Philip, what's your advice for consumers? How do they spot a fake?
There is no miracle solution, because you have so many counterfeits in so many different areas of products that there is no miracle solution. However, I think common sense is usually a good way to spot a counterfeit. There is no miracle deal for the latest fashion bag at 40% discount. If you see a low price, which is not normal, if you spot a product and you find that the quality is perhaps not totally right, if the packaging is not looking good, or if you buy, you know, in a place where you should not find this brand, like in a dark alley in Bangkok, or in the trunk of a car, which is not usually where you would find these products, then you need to ask yourself questions.
Stand from to a te, oh sole mio. Stand from to a te, stand a fro cia te.
If something is copied, it implies it's of value. You would counterfeit a $50 note, but you're not going to copy a discarded cigarette butt. Fakes are hard to spot, even next to the real thing. And sometimes they're so good, we don't even care whether they're genuine.
Like a big pizza pie, that's amore, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
So, how do you know if something is the real deal or not? How can you tell if the ride you're on is taking you in the right direction? Well, you need to know where it came from, and you have to know its history.
The most brilliant and insidious counterfeiting scheme the world's ever seen had its origins in this city almost 2,000 years ago. The remains are all around me, if you know where to look. The original product, if you will, began with Jesus, who lived on the outskirts of the Roman Empire, about 2,000 kilometres that way. The message of Jesus and his original church was absolutely mind-blowing. It spread out across the empire like wildfire. Some said Jesus' followers turned the world upside down. The teachings of Jesus remained unchanged until Christianity came here, to Rome.
In many ways, Rome was just like Vegas. It was a city of excess, a city of entertainment and indulgence. A difficult place to survive if you're going against the crowd. When the Christians first came to Rome, they stuck out like a sore thumb. The message they taught was different. It was an uncompromising message of graciousness. They claimed that their Jesus, who had been crucified and returned to life, was the only way to salvation.
It's said that when Rome burned in AD 64, Emperor Nero was the culprit. Yet he pinned the blame on the Christians. Many were thrown to the lions, crucified and burned. It was dangerous to be a Christian in Rome, but it was even more dangerous to be a Jew. They were seen as the most disruptive group in the empire.
The Romans lumped the Christians in with the Jews. After all, Jesus was a Jew. The Bible was written by Jews. Their leaders were Jews. And they kept the same day of worship as the Jews.
You can see the problem. If you do the same things, you must be the same people, right?
Time passed. Under waves of persecution, the Christians in Rome began to soften their message. What's the use in dying for what you believe when you can stay alive and do good? They also found a way to distinguish themselves from the Jews. One of the most visible marks of being Jewish was Sabbath worship. The Jews wouldn't work on Saturday the Sabbath. Instead, they worshipped in their synagogues. The Christians in Rome said, what better way to separate ourselves from the Jews than by meeting on a different day? And soon the Christians in Rome were keeping both Saturday and Sunday. Christians everywhere else, Jerusalem, Corinth, Milan, still worshipped exclusively on Saturday. But when they visited Rome, many accommodated the practice of the Roman Christians. As Ambrose, the Bishop of Milan, said, and I'm sure you've heard this proverb before, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. By the 3rd century, the Roman Empire had lots of gods and lots of religions. But the most important god was Sol Invictus, the sun god. Enter Constantine in the early 300s. He's hailed as the first Christian Roman emperor, and this arch here commemorates his rule. Constantine had a problem. He had the pagans over here on the left worshipping the sun, and the Christians over here on the right worshipping God, and he was stuck in the middle trying to bring them all together. So with two polar opposites, what was Constantine to do? Well, he had a plan.
Constantine decided to bring order to the worship chaos and unite everyone under one god. The sun god worshippers already worshipped on Sunday, and many Christians had taken on Sunday as a second day of worship to distance themselves from the Jews. So being the supreme politician that he was, Constantine saw an opportunity to unite both factions through Sunday. He introduced an edict making Sunday an official holiday. The benefit to the Christians was freedom from persecution. All they had to do was worship on Sunday. To sweeten the deal, Constantine became Christian. He offered the power of the Roman Empire to evangelize the world. All the Christians had to do was agree to completely transfer their biblical day of worship to the day of the sun.
Constantine united everyone, no matter what they believed, under this common day. Inch by inch, the original world-changing message of Jesus was replaced with a cheap, palatable, and politically correct message. Christianity was now the official state religion. Pagan temples were rededicated as churches. Christian holidays were piggybacked onto pagan festivals. And even statues of pagan gods were reclaimed as Christian saints. For centuries, millions of devoted pilgrims have come to kiss the feet of the statue of St. Peter. His stone toes have all but worn away. But is this really a statue of Peter? To find out, we have to go 7 kilometres northeast of where we are now.
This is where the statue of St. Peter originally came from, the Church of Santa Maria ad Martires. Except it wasn't always a church. It was originally a pantheon, a temple dedicated to all the gods, Neptune, Pluto, Apollo, Mars, and many more. In 609 AD, the Byzantine Emperor Phocas gave this temple to Pope Boniface IV, who converted it into a church. The stone gods were simply rededicated and renamed as Christian heroes. Most of them today are in the Vatican Museum, but the greatest statue of them all, the idol of the god Jupiter, became St. Peter. Nowadays, it's hard to tell what belongs to genuine Christianity and what doesn't.
In some cases, people buy counterfeits and think they are just genuine products, and it's bad for the genuine companies because obviously it does hurt their image.
So, Philip, tell me, what's your interest in counterfeit?
Obviously, there is an economical and professional one. I mean, counterfeiting is harms the family business, the company, my company, the Lacoste company, the little polo with a small alligator on it. It does endanger the company, the community, but there is also a very a more personal interest. You know, it's my name that is on these shirts. It's the creation of my grandfather. It's my grandfather's legacy. And when I see a counterfeit shirt, for me it's an insult to the memory, to the legacy of my grandfather.
Tell me a bit more about that, what it's meant for the reputation of the Lacoste name.
I mean, the reputation of a Lacoste name is a good one, thanks God. But counterfeiting endangers your name. It does impact your name. It banalizes your product. Something that obviously impacts your economical activity, but it is also something, as I said before, which personally I find hurtful.
If God had a brand or a logo, it would have to be the seventh day Sabbath. It's at the heart of his law and identifies him as the genuine owner of planet Earth and everything in it, including you and me. In 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth and all that's in them and rested on the seventh day. Not a seventh, but the seventh, Saturday, the Sabbath. The Bible says that God set up the Sabbath as a sign, a symbol, just like a brand. It encapsulates the ethos of God's company, rest for the soul, trusting in God to look after us, the whole idea of being a friend of God instead of a robot.
So the Ten Commandments show clearly that the seventh day of the week, Saturday, is the Sabbath, God's day of worship.
And if you go right back to creation, the beginning of history, God created for 6 days and then rested on the seventh. So why then do most Christians keep Sunday the first day of the week?
And does the day you worship on even matter?
Well, let's look at what Jesus did. He never kept Sunday. God never blessed Sunday. And the apostles never kept it. It may surprise you that nowhere in the Bible is there any evidence of a change from the seventh to the first day of the week. What does that mean? Could Sunday be the greatest counterfeit of all time?
When referring to counterfeit money, the Reserve Bank of Australia makes this observation. To determine if a suspect banknote is a counterfeit, it is best to compare it with a banknote that is known to be genuine. That's an important principle. The best way to spot a fake is to compare it with the real thing.
This fake was actually in a very famous art gallery here in Paris until it was discovered to be counterfeit. Tell you what, I bet they were pretty annoyed when they found out it wasn't genuine. But some fakes, if you get taken in by them, well, the consequences are a little more serious than a bruised ego.
For the consumer, it can often be very dangerous. I mean, when you are speaking of automobile parts which are of a lower quality, when you are speaking of drugs, which can even have dangerous elements, components in them, it can have an impact which endangers life. You had, as an example, a counterfeited milk for babies, you know, powder milk, which killed around 200 babies, so, and which made quite a lot of us ill. A condom that is not going to protect you against all the disease you can get, and especially AIDS. This is the kind of dangers you can face with counterfeits.
The most dangerous counterfeits are the life-threatening ones. If you get taken in by fake car parts, it could kill you. But if you get duped by a counterfeit religion, well, that has eternal consequences.
I know many good Christian people who go to church every Sunday, totally unaware that they've been taken in by a counterfeit. You see, for the early part of my life, I was brought up to follow the tradition of keeping Sunday. But then I read about the Bible Sabbath and the counterfeit. And I know how I felt when I realised I'd been taken in. If you're anything like me, you might even be thinking, well, nice story, Jeff, but so what? Well, consider this. One of the devil's many strategies from the beginning was to question the word and authority of God. The first thing he said to Eve was, did God really say you can't eat from any tree in the garden? What God had actually said was, you can eat from any tree except this one. This first counterfeit statement was designed to undermine the authority of God. God was saying that one tree was different to all the others. The devil said, no, all trees are the same. And you know what? He uses a similar argument against the Sabbath. It doesn't matter what day you keep. They're all the same. So why not worship on Sunday? Well, the seventh-day Sabbath is God's brand, his logo, his holy day. It's stamped with his authority. So to change it is to challenge the very authority of God. And you know what? You'd expect the devil to target something that's important. Sabbath, the genuine article, stands for everything most important to God. Compassion, relationships, and love. And like a brand or a logo, represents all that a company stands for, its values and its authority. So the Sabbath represents the Creator and everything he stands for. The counterfeit Sabbath undermines all of those things. So how can we be protected from the counterfeits? Well, that's where the Bible comes in. It's God's safeguard against deception. And the Bible's silence on Sunday is clear. So what's in a day? Everything.